So I says to Dwan, I says, of course you spec Fallen Earth to run on Windows Vista. If there were any more conflicts, you would have required them to upgrade to Windows Choda.
Because it's like Choda in the game. Oh, that's good stuff.
That one is always a hit at dinner parties.
I'm definitely rating that one up there with that time we made my grandma believe we'd release the Shiva virus into her church gymnasium during bingo night.
Oh, that's right! And right when they called B7, you pretended to throw up on the floor, and then you started screaming that Global Tech had betrayed us all?
And when the cops asked us why all these 70-year-old ladies were collapsed in that same doorway, I told them it was because of lag.
Oh, I laughed so hard I almost died.
And then right after that, my grandma actually did. Oh, man. Oh, those were good times.
Did I just hear someone knock at your door?
Yeah, someone did just knock at my door. Oh, crap. They're wearing suits and sunglasses. They look like government agents.
Oh, the feds must have caught wind of your assumption that Icarus Studios was using alien technology for their server systems.
Well, they are.
Oh, well, there you go then.
Yeah, I better call you back.
All right, cool.
Ah, hello.
Hello, sir.
Who are you?
Are you Jonathan Morris, sir?
Yeah.
Mr. Morris, do you help co-host a podcast known as Through the Aftermath?
Yeah. Are you guys listeners of the show or something?
No, sir. Not exactly.
Mr. Morris, we're agents from the Federal Communications Commission.
Wait a minute. You guys are from the FCC?
That's correct. I'm Agent Pierce. This is Agent Love.
Pierce? Love? All you need is rock and roll, and you guys can make a band and go on tour playing John Lennon music.
Please don't do that joke.
We hate that joke. We don't laugh.
You don't laugh?
No, sir. We don't laugh.
Oh, geez. You guys are feds. Am I in trouble or something?
That remains to be seen.
Mr. Morris, we've had numerous complaints about you and your podcast. We're here conducting an investigation into whether they are indeed true or not.
What complaints? I love doing the show.
Yes, sir. That's the problem. You love too much.
Huh?
We've had at least 13 complaints that you love everything in general. 2 that you love whatever you were talking about at the time. 6 that you haven't ever actually hated something. And 3 that you are far too enthusiastic to be a real person.
Are you calling me a Cylon?
Don't make that joke either.
We hate that one too.
I wasn't joking. Look, let me get this straight. You're here conducting an investigation into the idea that I like too much?
Correct. The general consensus is that no person could possibly be that enthusiastic and truly like that many things to be telling the truth. Your personality is therefore considered a charade and therefore in violation of at least 13 FCC regulations. That's why we're here.
You think I'm lying and that I may actually hate the things I like?
Yes, sir.
I like that.
Don't do that.
Okay.
We have a warrant here to search the premises for evidence that you indeed are telling the truth with everything you claim to be enthusiastic about.
You want to search my house for proof that I really do like all the things I mention on the show?
Correct. And stop rewarding my sentences, sir.
Sure.
And stop smiling and being happy.
I am happy. Wait a minute, wasn't that the point of why you were here in the first place?
Our first concern we have here is Form 1319. It's about you claiming to love the Fallout games.
I always have.
It's a proven fact in our experience that rarely does someone like something as much as you're claiming. In fact, in your last 25 shows of Through the Aftermath, you said the phrase, so good, approximately 19 times in regard to Fallout.
Yikes.
If we could just step inside your house, we can continue with the investigation.
Actually, we don't call it the house, we call it the vault.
What?
We call it the vault. You know, like in Fallout.
Really?
So good.
20 times.
Yeah, feel free to come in. Forgive the mess. I left my Vault-Tec bobbleheads in a mess on the floor over there, and you'll have to excuse the full-size power armor against the wall there. Yeah, come and sit. Go ahead and push that stuffed rad scorpion out of the way and pull up an ammo crate and sit down.
That's an interesting set of Fallout paraphernalia you appear to have here.
Oh, this? Oh, this is nothing. You should see the stuff in the bomb shelter. Problem?
No.
We've also heard you mention how much you love Fallen Earth. This is another concern the FCC has. Apparently, you not only talk about that game the first chance you get, you also rave about the dev team.
Yeah.
And yet, you don't have a character past level 20, and you claim that it was due to overtime at work?
Yeah, right.
So tell me, if you would, Mr. Morris, how is it that you could claim to love a game so much, and yet not actually have time lately to play it?
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely love the game. The story, the gameplay, especially the dev team. They're great.
Though you claim they are using alien technology to power the servers.
Well, you're the government, guys. You should know.
We do.
Are they?
Mr. Morris, you really think that we are going to believe you are truly the Fallen Earth fan you claim to be?
Oh, the guys on the LifeNet podcast will vouch for me.
Mr. Morris.
Call me Jonathan.
Mr. Jonathan.
Or you can also call me Chota Killer.
Cute.
You think this proves against our claims? You think just because you have a giant Fallen Earth box in your hallway...
Oh, the crossing.
What?
Yeah, we call that hallway into the kitchen Embry Crossing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And back in the bedroom area over there, we call that Sector 2. And the bathroom over there, let's just say we call the bathroom the PvP zone.
And I suppose your yard is the Keller's farm?
No.
Ha!
But the Kellers do live next door.
What?
It's true. I checked. A family called the Kellers do live next door.
Boy, that sure worked out good for me, huh?
Shut up! Look, I'm not convinced of any of this. This is too perfectly orchestrated.
Really?
And what about being a Mad Max fan like you and Sean always brag about? You going to tell me you own the entire box set on DVD, complete with behind the scenes and extra footage?
No.
Ha!
But that's because I lent it to Sean.
Ugh!
You know, actually, you've had me wanting to check this stuff out.
No, you won't!
So you say Fallout 3 is that good?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
And Fallen Earth is a definite must-try.
Oh, totally, I love it.
Stop saying you love everything, Mr. Morris!
Well, I mean, I like it okay.
Really?
No, I'm kidding, I love it.
Shut up! We're leaving!
You know, I'm convinced. He really does seem to like all these things. He's even got a Pip-Boy 3000 on his dog.
I don't care. This isn't over. Why would someone even have a Pip-Boy on his dog?
Well, thanks for coming over, though. I mean, you guys really are welcome anytime. And if you ever come back and I'm not here, just leave a message in my Protectron over here on the side of the yard.
Tickets, please.
No, I might do that.
No, we're not! You hear me, Mr. Morris? This isn't over. We'll find something you don't like. We'll be listening to your show. And the first sign of you ever playing something you claim to like, we'll be there. Something bigger than Fallout.
So good.
Shut up!
Welcome back, everyone, to this 25th episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and with me once again is my co-host, Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
It's cold.
It is cold. Oh, I know.
Even in the desert, in the desert wasteland, and I'm speaking both literally and figuratively now. In the desert wasteland in which I live, it got pretty freaking cold today. Because you know, where I live in St. George is, you know, we usually get, even in the wintertime, it's like, you know, yeah, you're wearing shorts, which is not necessarily true, but today it's been, now those up north where I used to live, you know, in Detroit, they would probably laugh like, but like, it's like 20 degrees for here in the desert where the wind is blowing a lot and, you know, it's, you know, out here it gets like psycho bitter cold just because it's the desert, it's so open. That's pretty crazy. Like people are getting sick left and right and I'm just like,
wow.
So.
That's actually like that here too, except we have a little bit more of a kind of a tropical valley thing going on here, and it's supposed to get down to 31 tonight, and that is really cold for here. So,
yeah.
So they're like, and there's like a chance of snow, and so people are stocking up at the grocery stores, and it's like the apocalypse for
it's snow. They call off school when it snows here. I'm not even joking because it's mainly because people can't drive.
Yeah.
But, or that we're a retirement community. That could be why, too. Like, old people are driving, get off the road! but turns into Mad Max with, like, old people. But that's right, because you have probably a similar climate to us, except yours is obviously more humid, which the humidity probably eats through your clothes quicker with the cold. But
yeah, I'd say the temperatures are probably similar, but we have that humidity thing and it really sucks. But it's kind of funny. Like the coldest I think I've ever seen it here was about 13, and that was that was probably 5 years ago, and people were just going insane. It was just, it was crazy. There was like panic on the streets and everything.
That's awesome.
But it's funny because like I grew up north too in Chicago, and I'm like 13. Like you can have a cookout at, you know, when it's 13 out. What are you talking about? Like try negative 30, you know.
Well, that's the thing is people in Detroit, they're like, try when the wind is blowing and it's like 20 below zero and you're trying to like put the diesel fuel into your heater. And I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like I forget like, oh, yeah, I used to walk to school at 6 a.m. and my hair would freeze before I'd even gotten there. Yeah. So
yeah.
I guess I've become acclimatized to this place.
Good times.
It's the radiation.
Well, let's see. This show, we're going to talk about the movie Doomsday. And this is a movie that I saw it was last year. I think it was when it – not too long after it came out on DVD I saw it. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And then what's funny is I watched it again recently, you know, to kind of refresh my memory for this show. And I watched it about three, four days ago. And I was like, you know what? It's a really cool idea. And I guess the movie – there are some amazing effects and everything. But it's not as cool as I thought. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about kind of our impressions of of the movie itself. Plus, you know, we'll touch on the good and bad. I guess you could say, and that'll be our show for that'll be our entire topic.
I'm sorry. The reason I'm laughing is it's seriously like, and it just dawns on me. It's almost like we're like, yeah, we plan on talking about this movie because it sounded cool, but now that we watched the movie, we apologize in advance for this episode. No, and it's we'll get into why that is. That's funny you mentioned that though.
Yeah, it's I don't know. We'll get into that though. Yeah. But before we do that, let's talk about what we've been doing these last 2 weeks. So you want to start off?
Yeah, I'll start off. Yeah, it's funny, you know, the last 2 weeks, you know, obviously we had the holiday weekend, during the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, which means I got a day or two off of work and kind of hung out with the family. And one of the things that was big is you heard me in the last episode mention that I was going to be getting a laptop. Well, my laptop finally came and I'm quite pleased with it. I kind of paid extra money to make the thing as beefy as possible. And I have to admit, you always expect a laptop to run way slower compared to the desktop, but this laptop outdoes my desktop. And I mean, not only can I play everything on it, I can play it really good. So I was playing like Fallen Earth. I have everything like cranked. It's like perfect. And you know, I'm playing all that. I was thinking, oh, okay, if I can play Fallen Earth, it's like downhill from here. And I was like, you know, trying to play all these other games that were like, you know, even like Crysis, you know, can run it perfect. And I'm like, oh, this is great. And then, okay, and this is the end all. Right after that, I realized my laptop had an HDMI output.
Whoa.
And I looked over at my, like, you know, I have like the, you know, 53-inch screen television that I keep talking about with Fallout 3. And I look over at the screen, I look back at my computer, I look at Fallen Earth, look back at my screen, look back at Fallen Earth, and this smirk crawls across my face that makes me look like I had just inhaled Smilex gas. And after that, I'm like, oh, you know, so, you know, you get the wireless Bluetooth keyboard and Bluetooth, mouse.
Yeah.
And it's funny, which sounds ridiculous. It's like, I bought a laptop to play on a big screen, but it's not like that because I use it for other things, but I just realized, wow, I just figured out a way to have a giant screen Fallen Earth. So that was a wonderful, like, addition to it, but,
that's cool.
It was cool. It'll be good. I mean, that'll definitely help in the Fallen Earth department. That's one place where I've been sad I haven't been able to have more time because this time of the year is kind of crazy at work, which is funny because lately everything's been crazy work. But one of the things I wanted to mention was that, you know, you heard me mention that I was playing Fallout 3 on my PS3, mainly because my wife was digging on watching and my kids were having fun watching it. And what started out as me just kind of randomly playing it here and there, one thing about and I'll just put the disclaimer in front. You guys heard me probably talk about Fallout 3 I don't want everybody to be like, here we go again, because something actually clicked different, and I had to share a story of something that happened, because one thing about Fallen – I keep wanting to say Fallen Earth. One thing about Fallout 3 – you see the two are blending? This is a good thing. The thing about Fallout 3 is that it's open-ended enough that there are times when people can be overwhelmed. If you take a break from it, sometimes you think, well, I don't know if I want to go back into it. But anybody who ever does start playing it or go back into it ends up being grabbed by things that they weren't in to see the first time, or in the game, you'll find yourself being drawn into the game hardcore. And that's so what started out as, you know, the Thanksgiving weekend, yeah, I'll play some Fallout 3 with the kids turned into this, like, marathon where I was staying up till 3 in the morning playing it because I just didn't want to stop playing. And anyways, long story short, there was this one moment in the game where – and those of you who played the game know what I – will probably know what I'm talking about, maybe. Those who haven't played the game, what I'm hoping is that, A, it's, I'm sharing this with you because I don't have anybody who would understand why this is so cool. And I figure that, like, hey, if anybody's going to appreciate it, it's the listeners. So long story short, what happened is I was in this one segment where I had been up in Pittsburgh playing the Pit, which is the download content in Pittsburgh. And I figured out that, you know, if you've ever played Oblivion, one of the things that happens is in Oblivion and Fallout 3 is you obviously only have a certain amount of weight you can carry. And once you get past that weight, in Oblivion, it actually would stop you from moving. If you carried too much weight, you stopped. Well, in Fallout 3, to kind of – because you kind of scrounge a lot. They didn't put that limitation on you, so it's a little unrealistic. But you can actually carry, like, more weight, but you just can barely walk. And one of the things I had done was I wanted to kind of speed the process with money, and I thought, you know what? I picked up all this great stuff in the Pit, and I didn't want to get rid of it. And so I ended up literally walking 2 miles an hour through the Pit, even down the segments near – and those of you who played the Pit will know this. There's this one segment where you basically you're getting chased down by these, like, Morlock trog things, and you have to, like, run through it and just – like, because they're coming after you, and it's this big chase scene. And instead of being a chase scene, there was this moment where I'm, like – quietly sidestepping, quietly, slowly, 2 miles an hour. They're running after me. I'm just shooting them quietly, 2 miles an hour, and got my way out of the Pit. And I was like, okay, I got through all that. I'm going to take all this stuff, and I have to go sell it. And the problem was that, and I'll try to make this, you know, speedy for you, but I wanted to go sell this stuff. And unfortunately, where you pop out to go to the Pit is in the middle of freaking nowhere. The nearest stuff, there's some army bases nearby that are full of robots, stuff like that. And really, there's nowhere to go to sell this stuff because most of what you catch hold of on the western side are a lot of abandoned areas, you know, like forest-style areas, that type of thing. And I realized the nearest place was going to be probably Tenpenny Tower, which was near at the bottom of the map. And so I spent this ridiculous amount of time slowly making my way south. And so that in itself was ironic. I mean, I was basically 2 mile an houring it, and every time I turn a corner, I'd find, like, oh, great, more Enclave. Fantastic. And so I'm running out of ammo, and it really did become almost this intense scrounging game. It almost added this level up to the game that I had never noticed because fast travel, you know, you just tend to jump to the place and then jump to the next place. This is the first time that I really took the time to, like, walk to a new area. And I've heard of people doing this in Oblivion and having a whole new level of immersion to it. But anyways, on my way there, you hit this part where there is the thing about the Fallout 3 is the developers hand place everything. And there's not much there that isn't put there on purpose. I mean, there's places that look arbitrary, but you get look closer and there's this level under the game that you can tell nothing's arbitrarily put there. Somebody had a purpose in putting it. And I got to this one part south, the southwestern area where you're basically making your way down this old freeway, and it ends up in this freeway over, like this complete interchange of freeways that had fallen apart. And there's this overpass that basically cuts off from the main freeway that keeps going south and goes around to the side, and the whole overpass is kind of crumbling. And this overpass is just packed with cars. I mean, you could just tell that the bombs fell right in the middle of, like, rush hour traffic. And meanwhile, like, to the south, I noticed through my little – I was using my sniper scope, And the reason I'm telling you this is because this is going to sound like an action movie where this is going. So I had my sniper scope. I was looking and noticed an Enclave encampment down the southern side of the main interstate. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this exit ramp. And you pass through this area called there's like an old fort, like abandoned fort of old cars. And so that should give, you know, those of you who played it kind of an idea where I was. So I was going to try to make my way across this side overpass that curls around. And the overpass is crumbling, but it's still possible to walk. Now, keep in mind, I'm doing this at 2 miles an hour, and the problem with it is you can't jump either, and if you're not careful, there's a lot of places, nooks and crannies, where you can accidentally sidestep, fall in, and can't move. And so I'm like, okay, no problem. I'm going to take this one step at a time. It looks like there's less people likely to be on the bridge. I see tons of cars, so I don't see any bases or anything, so I'm just going to make my way around there. And little by little, I make my way around. I'm trying to avoid, like, all the little nooks and crannies, and funny enough, I actually didn't run into enemies on the bridge, but I'm kind of weaving my way through the cars. And I got to kind of the middle of the bridge area where it kind of opens up for a second and then more cars. And as I'm coming around the corner, I'm thinking, wow, that was really you know, good that I didn't catch anything. I took the right way to do it because I can barely run or walk or anything. And as I'm coming around the corner, I look through my sniper scope, and at the very end, I'm getting around to the curve of this where it connects back with the freeway and everything's looking great. And then I notice, do you remember the Mirelurk Kings in Fallout 3?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, for those of you who don't know, Mirelurk Kings are basically these ethereal things that use telekinetic energy to fire at you. Mm. Well, the funny thing was, at the very end of this bridge, and I cannot believe that someone didn't do this on purpose because they knew at this moment you would be at that place at that time. So I come around the corner, and this Mirelurk King at the very end of the bridge is the only thing between me and freedom. And I can't turn around and go back because the way I've jumped down without jumping, mm-hmm. There's no way I can go back. Yeah. So I come around this corner, and this Mirelurk King, sure enough, the little sucker sees me, and all of a sudden these like beams, wave beams start flying by me, and I'm like, oh crap, you know, he's going to kill me. And then all of a sudden something dawns on me. I'm in the middle of this overpass, and there's 50 cars in front of me and 50 cars behind me. And for those of you who haven't played Fallout 3, the cars in Fallout 3 are like the world of the future, the way the people in the 50s saw it. And so the cars are atomic powered, which means they have live reactors. Mm-hmm. And so if this had been a movie, what would have happened would have been it would have had this like close up shot of the Mirelurk King and would have pulled back super fast. You would have this dun 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 dun, and you would have seen me staring at this group of cars. And then there would have just been this moment where I went, crap. And then everything would have just slow motion started. And sure enough, right on cue, this thing fires one at the car in front of me ignites. And this is in my mind happening in slow mo. Boom, boom, boom. Cars like dominoes are going up. And now keep in mind, I'm going 2 miles an hour. So I'm like, I'm literally looking like, Lightning McQueen at the end of the first race where he's jumping on no tires, like run, 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 you know. And at the very end of it, I just happened to catch the side of the overpass just right. And I go leaping off the side of this overpass, like in the middle of like, I don't even know, like 100 feet in the air. I'm leaping off of it like Bruce Willis, like, aah! And behind me, like nuclear explosions. And I go falling down into the water, and I hit the water. I'm thinking I'm going to be dead. But I hit the water, I come up, and I'm like, I cannot freaking believe I'm still alive. And I look up at the bridge, and it's just pure flame. And I'm thinking, man, somebody did it on purpose. And all of a sudden, at that moment, I realize, that was awesome! And I start looking around the room like, that was... Nobody saw that. And I was just like, oh, come on. Like, I don't think I could replay the moment perfectly if I tried. And perhaps my telling this story on our show is therapeutic in some form because it was like one of those lost moments. But I thought, you know what? If anybody would appreciate something like that happening, I'm like, I just have to get this out. Even if this sounds like ridiculous to the people listening. But I thought, you know what? If anybody would appreciate that story, you know, especially in Fallout 3, you know, and those of you who haven't played it would appreciate like, That kind of stuff happens a lot in the game. These moments that are like, that's so cool, you know. So there that is. Now I can sleep at night.
Yeah, you know, I can see that. I can see some kind of designer sitting there going, I'm gonna put a Mirelurk King by a whole bunch of cars, and especially on a bridge where that's the only way to go and stuff. Yeah, I could see them doing that.
It had to have been on purpose. And I assume at that moment that they weren't expecting me to be going 2 miles an hour because the way it blew up, I was like, oh, crap. I mean, it got really close. Like, as I was jumping, the flame is going by. And I could tell that they're not planning on that because there'd be cinematic moments in the game where, you know, I go up to talk to somebody and I'm going 2 miles an hour. And you could tell, like, the guy's waiting to talk to you. But while he's talking, something else happens that triggers, screws up his scene.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, ha, ha, ha. But it was too cool. After that, I was like, I have to tell the people about this one. So
that's awesome.
So, wow. Yeah. That was my week.
it took you all week to get to that bridge.
it was the anticipation, and it was just building in that. I'm like, I have to tell the people before I snap, so. No, not really. Yeah.
That's cool.
About you? What have you been up to?
Oh, man. Let's see. Well, I watched Doomsday, like mm-hmm. I said. I've been playing a lot of Fallen Earth, actually. I made a new alt. I think I might have mentioned this last time. I forgot. But I made a new alt, and I'm kind of focusing on rifle and healing, like, you know, first aid, stuff like that. And just kind of doing the opposite of what my main was doing. Well, I'm already up to level 12 now, and it's like I kind of want to make this my main now. I'm really having a lot of fun, and I never, you know, I didn't really mess with this before because my main is melee, so it's mm-hmm. all you know, up close battling with this really cool sword that I have for my Chota camp, and So now I'm trying rifles, and of course my main can kind of twink out my alt because I can make some pretty nice stuff and give it to her. So I made this really cool scoped rifle for her, and when she got eligible, I basically bumped her rifle skill as high as it would go, and she's using this rifle and it has a scope on it. And I never really messed with the scope before. You press B, and it'll put it in scope mode. And the scope mode is so cool because it actually has a reading and where it'll tell you how far away stuff is when you mouse.
Really?
Yeah, when the crosshairs are over stuff, it'll tell you how far away. So it's like a rangefinder, like built in. And, so I'm sitting there and you can do this on your horse too, right? So this is really cool. So I guess, this is a little story of my own here, I guess. And there's this one, quest in, I think it's in Embry. You get it from a guy named Pop Stevens, I think. And you have to kill this guy. Well, you go to this location and then these two guys pop up. There's this one guy that you've met earlier in the game and then he has his companion. They pop up in the middle of the road. And the first time I did this, I was trying to get off my horse. And when you have a rifle, you have -60 melee, defense. So you're just a sitting duck. If you have a rifle in your hand and they're beating on you, you're dead. So, you know, I'm getting off my horse, they're beating on me, and I die. And I'm like, oh, I got to think of a different strategy. So I try it again, go back out there, and this time I ride by on my horse and trigger them to pop up. And so they pop up, but I keep riding my horse, and they're chasing after me on the road. So I kind of do this U-turn thing, stop, put the scope on, and bam, headshot the one guy. And I couldn't get both of them because the other guy's almost on me by then. So then I run past him, go all the way down the opposite direction on the road, stop, do a U-turn, throw on the scope, bam, shoot him in the head. It was so cool. It was like I don't know how to describe it, but it was one of those things that you can't do that I've never been able to do in any other game. You know what I mean? Where I had to have a little bit of strategy. I just couldn't sit there and beat on him. You know what I mean? Or I couldn't just sit there and shoot my rifle at him because I was so, you know, it's a long range rifle. I mean, I could have got out my crossbow and I don't have any melee skill at all. So I couldn't have really done any melee stuff. My crossbow is usually my moderate range thing. I usually use that, but I wanted to try this and it was really cool because it was like, you know, riding your horse to the end, then you stop, do this U-turns and then, you know, kind of prop the gun up on the horse and bam. And just to be able to do that without getting off the horse and without, you know, doing any of that stuff, you just do it right there. That was so much fun. So this, you know, I guess longer story short, this is my main now, I think. I'm really enjoying the scope. And the scoped rifle and everything. I keep hearing from people, well, just wait until you start getting a little bit further on, and you're going to get mobs kind of rushing you, and you can't do anything against them when they're up on you. But the kind of solution to this is I've been running around with a group of guys who might actually be listening to this. I don't know. The Casualties of War Guild.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about that last time and how I've kind of been running around with them. But they've been great. We've been doing regular nights each week, and it started out as an alt night where they're running their alts through all the cities and doing all the quests, which I never thought I would want to do, but I'm getting so much AP, it's really worth it. So I've been having just a blast with that. It's really great when you have a group and you can run around like that. It changes the game entirely. So it's been a lot of fun.
That makes me so excited because I mean, now that I have this laptop, I'm just like, I feel like I feel like I'm coming into the game a little late, but like that there's so much there now, and because the game's starting to like, I mean, it's solid. And it's funny because we were talking about that whole scene. I'm just thinking like Sean was Mel Gibson in The Patriot. Yeah. You know, when he would run, he'd run and like snipe the guy, and then run to the next tree and snipe that guy. I'm like, dude, yes.
Yes, exactly.
You were rescuing your son from the British. Oh wait, man! I'm like, you might have people from Britain. We better not say anything. No, it's from the, you know, those guys. So that's funny, dude. That's epic. I had a Die Hard moment. You had like the Patriot moment.
Yeah, seriously, it was really awesome. Cool. And you know, I just wanted to say too, you know, I keep talking about how much fun I'm having with this other guild. And in the meantime, we have our own Fallen Earth guild. I'm not so I don't want to say that like I'm having more fun with them or anything. But it's just, you know, running around there with the alts and everything. It's been a lot of fun. As far as our guild, we're still going pretty strong. I was on today earlier and we had a bunch of people on. It was really cool. I handed the leadership over to, Goodyear, who is, he was on our show, RPG Objects. on that show,
right.
On the RPG Optics show. So he took over the clan, and just because, you know, I wasn't on that character all the time. But yeah, I've been having a lot of fun. You know, I have to, one last thing I have to describe here. I know we're totally running late here, but one last thing I thought was kind of funny. I had this bug in this game, and now, you know, bugs are not uncommon in Fallen Earth, and but I had one that I thought was kind of funny. A listener to this show, who is the most generous person I've ever known, gave me a dune buggy key.
Oh.
I know, and I almost feel bad saying it because, but I can't use it yet. I don't have a high enough dexterity. But once I get to that part where I can use it, man. But you can believe that I thanked him up and down. I mean, it's amazing because I'm to the point on my main where I can almost make a dune buggy. Like, I have the most of the parts. I think I don't have the frame book yet. And I don't have the tires book yet. But I have all. You know, I can make the engine. I can make the. I have the book to actually make the dune buggy. So anyway, I realize that it's a long process. It's a very, very long process.
Oh, yeah.
And it's expensive. So I can't believe that he gave me this key. He just kind of gave it to me, for doing the shows, I guess, and everything. But so I had this key in my inventory on my horse. It was actually my horse's inventory. I'm running from somewhere, I think Mumford to Embry Crossroads, and all of a sudden I get this little notification saying that my dune buggy key broke. And I'm like, what?
What?
That's weird. Like, I didn't do anything. It was just sitting in my inventory. So then I'm speculating. I'm like, well, is it because I have, like, scrap iron in there? Like, you know, if you're running around with a key and a bunch of scrap iron in a bag, or, you know, and I thought, well, that would be kind of weird. Like, I've never come across that before. So I kind of ignored it. I figured I'll just fix it, you know, at some point. It must be some weird bug. Well, I go, I'm doing some crafting. A couple hours later, I come back in the game and I look at it and the key is gone. And in its place are 56, Mark MK3 vests.
Whoa.
56 of them. And they're in one.
Dang.
So I'm like, okay, this is a problem. So I send a bug report, and what's even crazy, it gets crazier. I send a bug report, I'm writing up the bug report, I look up to make sure that it says 56, and now there's 51. And I'm like, wait a minute, I know it just said 56. So I'm like, okay, maybe I read it wrong, I don't know. So I write in the bug report and I say, there are 51 vests, you know, that replace my broken key, blah, blah, blah. And I look up, and now it's at 46. And I'm like, whoa, what's happening here? So the number kept going down and down and down. So then I actually wrote in the bug report, okay, as I'm writing this, the number is going down. And so the next day I come back. I didn't get a reply yet from Fallen Earth. Next day I come back and I look in my inventory, and this time it's a book. It's a recipe book. And I'm like, what is going on? And they responded to me actually the next day, and they said, we have never seen anything like this before. We don't know what's happening. We can't recreate the bug. It's really weird. So then I went in, they basically told me to hold off a little bit, and I went back in the game, and luckily my dune buggy key was back. So
yeah.
Either they fixed it or it fixed itself. I don't know, but that had to have been the weirdest thing. And the fact that they said that they've never seen anything like that, you know, you can't even stack, vests anyway. You can't, you know, and it's just weird that there was a stack of 56 of them. I don't know.
Wow.
It was a weird one.
So, yeah, well, that was that alien technology.
Yeah, I think that.
Sometimes it doesn't coordinate well. It happens.
You know what I thought, too, is like they said that no one's ever reported that before. I imagine, I don't know for sure, but I imagine 56 of those Mark III vests are probably worth more than the dune buggy because they were like 120. They had a 120 requirement on armor use, which I think is max. I'm not sure. So those were like some pretty expensive vests there. And,
I was about to say, that's crazy.
I bet if that happened to, you know, I didn't want, because I wanted my dune buggy. I didn't want to mess with the vest.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wonder if that happened to other people and they were just like, I'm just going to sell these vests and, you know, and then I'll buy a dune buggy or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, good times.
How about that? That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know what? What's funny is we actually talked about previously on Massively. We kind of get together and think of ideas for features, and somebody actually came up with. And this is before this happened. They said, "Let's make a column or a feature on the craziest bugs you've ever seen in games." And that's something actually we're gonna do. We're working on. So I wish I would have taken screenshots, though. I could have got that all together and part of it.
Oh, well. That's awesome.
Oh, well, I guess getting away from that, let's do a little bit of news. And while we still have a little bit of time here, we have a couple things in news we wanted to talk about. One of them is there's a new zombie MMO that's supposed to be coming out. And, of course, we all love zombies. And zombies play a pretty big part of the apocalypse, I guess you could say. The founder, one of the co-founders of ArenaNet, which is they developed Guild Wars, of course, a couple years ago. One of the co-founders, Jeff Strain, he kind of broke away from NCSoft earlier this year, I think in August, and he broke away from ArenaNet and everything, and he said he was going to do his own thing, and now we finally find out what that is, and it's a zombie MMO. And the name of the company that he started, this new company, is called Undead Labs. And I guess this zombie MMO is going to be their one thing that they're going to do. So I think that's pretty interesting. I know Jeff Strain. I've met Jeff Strain in person a couple times, but he's a smart guy. You know, what he did with Guild Wars with the other guys was amazing. I mean, he used to work at Blizzard. You know, he worked on World of Warcraft, all that stuff. You know, he's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. And it really puts faith, you know, it puts a lot of hope into this zombie MMO. So I hope it turns into something good.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't think about that. Like, I think everybody's first response when they hear that is going to be, oh, great, a zombie MMO, the one genre they haven't tapped. And all of a sudden, it dawns on me, you know what? If, you know, put in the right context, something like that could be pretty dang amazing. I mean, look at how big Left 4 Dead is, because it's a very intense game in a very short period of time. And if he can somehow, you know, tap that kind of intensity, this is infected, sorry. but like, if he can tap that kind of intensity, it could be amazing. I mean, imagine being kind of like, you know, a 28 days later thing where you're in a very abandoned town and you're, who knows, maybe you're like, going in there for a reason, and everything's very fast-paced, and you and your friends are running and gunning, but it's on a much larger level. I could see that being very cool.
And I hope that both sides can be played, you know, like two factions, like zombies and survivors. That would
yes.
be cool.
I would play it, for sure. In fact, that makes me excited, because it's almost like that was an element I haven't thought of before. I mean, definitely could be, you know, a thing where... I mean, how much of us wouldn't want to play Left 4 Dead and have our character stay, you know, permanent?
That would
be cool.
Yeah, it'd be very cool. And then, let's see, our next piece of news, this is about Borderlands, which we've talked about before. But Borderlands has a new DLC, and again, this has to do with zombies, but it's called, this is called Zombie Island. Zombie Island of Dr. Ned is the full name of it. But have you, you have a 360 and a PlayStation 3, so you could get this. Did you get this yet?
You know, I haven't gotten to get it because when it comes to these kind of games, most of my first person shooters are always on the PC, just because I'm just better at it on that. Like when it comes to like fast paced on the consoles, I seem to like shoot myself in the face by accident. I don't know, but yeah, I played it. I'm waiting for it on the PC side. That's going to be
It hasn't launched yet for the PC side, but usually it's like 360 and PC, and then later you know, PlayStation 3. But this time, poor PC players, we have to wait now.
Yeah.
But let's see. One last piece of news I wanted to talk about was another story, and this is the movie The Road. Jonathan and I think last episode we were talking about how it was going to come out, because it came out the 25th, and we were like, yeah, we can't wait to see it. It's going to be great. And what's funny is, like, I think it was last Friday, because it came out on a Wednesday. Last Friday I was like, you know, my girlfriend and I, we got together and we're like, hey, let's go watch The Road. Okay. So we hop on, I think, Yahoo Movies, and you know, we do a search to see if it's playing in our area, and it says it's not. So we're a little surprised, and so I said, you know, I'm just going to do kind of a broader search and see how far away it's playing. Because maybe, you know, if it's like 30 minutes away, we could drive out there. I keep going farther and farther. I go like 50 miles out, then I'm going to go 100 miles out, and it's not playing anywhere. I mean, I live probably 100 miles from Atlanta, and so I do a search for Atlanta. And it's not even playing in Atlanta. That's a pretty big city. So I emailed Jonathan, and I'm like, hey, is The Road playing anywhere near you? And he's like, no, it's not. You know, he basically had the same story on his side. And so we're doing a little bit of research here, and it turns out that the movie is not really playing in that many theaters. It's only playing in like a handful, literally, of theaters.
Yeah, it's maybe those of you out there, you could tell us, you know, if you've seen it near you, but it very much seems like the old, you know, very limited release, and then somewhere down the line, magically, it shows up without even a word of anybody knowing it. All of a sudden, it's like one day you drive past the theater and you almost have a car accident with the guy in front of you because you're like, holy crap, it's there! You know, and it's, I predict that's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and I hope they do open it up because, I mean, man, they've been hyping this movie a lot, and it's, you know, I mean, it has Viggo in it. Like, what, it's not some obscure art house film. It's what I would think is a pretty big film. I mean, Charlize Theron, you know, it's a pretty big, it's got, what's the guy's name from Memento? Oh, I forgot his name.
Guy Pearce.
Yeah, he's in it too. I mean, these are some stars. It should be everywhere. That's the way I see it. So if anyone out there was lucky enough to see it, let us know. Let us know, you know, if it's playing near you or if you've seen any or heard anything about it being, opened up to a wider release later on.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that's about it for the news for this episode. Here we are 30 minutes in already, but let's go ahead and do the main topic here. This, is, of course, is the movie Doomsday. Just as kind of a brief overview of this movie. It's a movie about the – it's kind of like another infected, you know, zombie apocalypse kind of thing where this virus – they call it the Reaper virus. It infects Scotland. And it starts out in Scotland. So in order to contain this virus, the UK government or the London or Great Britain decides to kind of wall off Scotland. You know, so they build this giant wall, and they show this all at the beginning. They explain you know, how they, I think they built it out in the ocean, didn't they? Or like around the edges. But they built, yes, this giant wall all the way around Scotland to kind of, you know, quarantine the virus, and they show a lot of what's happening, and it's just horrific what happens. You know, the people are all dying, like instantly dying, and it's pretty bad. And what happens later, I think it's like 15, 16 years later, something like that. They find out that somehow somebody got through, and they started infecting people in London. So, and it started spreading in London. So then the Prime Minister is like, we need to send someone in Scotland and find this doctor who might know the cure. So they send this girl in, and she actually is Scottish. She was born in Scotland, but she was able to escape as a child. Her mom helped her escape. So she goes back in, and she leads this, you know, this team of, you know, ragtag military guy. You know, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a cliche military group where you can see the people right away and you know who's going to die first, you know. And so they go in and they kind of infiltrate this area of Scotland, well, you know, all of Scotland that has been just decimated for you know, like a dozen or so years, and they've rebuilt, and nobody really knew what was going on in Scotland until they sent in this party. So the party goes in, and this is where it gets interesting to me. Like, the first half hour of the movie, I think, is, I know it has to explain things, and I know it has to kind of lay down the, you know, the background and everything, but about 30 minutes in, when they start seeing those, the kind of raider-looking guys, that's when it gets cool. That's when I think that the movie really picks up. And, you know, they got these crazy guys just decked out. I mean, it's very Mad Max, and they're just decked out, and they're just violent, and there's, like, burning people alive, and there's, you know, heads coming off, and it's a really, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, it's just a violent, kind of society. Yeah, very grisly society that's left there in Scotland. What beyond that, when they actually go and they find the doctor that they're looking for, this doctor actually lives in a castle, an old ruined castle in Scotland. And what's cool about this is it's actually really filmed in an old ancient castle in Scotland. And, this is the doctor. He's kind of like a king now, and he's kind of recreating, medieval times. So he has knights, and these knights, this is the part that first got me when I first saw this movie for the first time, but, these knights are all made out of like their own armor, which looks very medieval, but it's also like scrap metal. and you can tell that it's like reshaped scrap metal into a very medieval design. And even the kind of studded leather armor that the king wears and everything, and it's very medieval, but you can tell that it was made from leftover modern metals and things like that. And I think it's a really just amazing concept, I think, and it's really cool. So past that, I mean, I don't want to give away. It's a recent movie, so we don't want to give away the ending or anything. But it's the biggest thing here is the whole meeting of modern military warriors or soldiers with these ancient medieval warriors and how they kind of coexist. And at one point, they take them prisoner, and they're kind of in their prison in this old castle. And it's a really cool idea. I like the way it was kind of portrayed and just the way it was written and directed and everything. I think it was done really well. So let's get on to kind of our impressions of it. Let's start with you. What did you think of this movie as far as, I mean, breaking it down between the storyline, the visuals, things like that. What did you like or dislike about this movie?
You know, it was one thing I did like about it is it was a culmination of a lot of post-apocalyptic style movies and a little bit taken from all of them. I mean, you know, the first chunk of the movie is very Escape from New York. It goes from being that to all of a sudden it goes to Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. I mean, you can see that they've taken segments from the Omega Man, for example. You can see like a lot of the empty house scenes where everything's overgrown, and I'm like, oh, that's very, you know, that Omega Man, that one that was based off of I Am Legend. Mm-hmm. And then of course you've got that element with the castle side, which is very Reign of Fire. Like they've taken Reign of Fire taken to a more Camelot style level. And then at the very end, of course, you start getting close to the end and you end up with Mad Max again with the car chases. And I'm like, you could tell that this guy basically took everything that he loved about post-apocalyptic movies and mishmashed them together with this fun action flick. And you can tell that he probably doesn't take it super seriously. He probably wants to just take you for a ride. And you just are going to have a good time. So don't go into this movie expecting you're going to come out of it going, that was the best movie I've ever seen, dude. It's more like you're going to go into this and it's going to be, there's going to be parts that almost are like, laughing funny because you're just like, dude, no way you went there. But at the same time, you're having a fun time with it. And if you can accept that it's a little hokey, well, it's a lot hokey in some parts, but it's a blast to watch. But I love the fact that he did, there's certain scenes and in movies where the movie might be okay, but you always have those certain scenes that stick in your mind. Like, one of the things they do in this movie is there's this, one of my favorite scenes, there's this one part where they basically, do this drop down panning shot where it shows, you can tell that where this wall and this gate are that lead into Scotland. And they do this panning up shot where you can tell it's the wall. You can tell the gate's there. It pans up, or then you see like the boot and the suit of the guy, the guard standing on the top of the tower, looking over into Scotland, and it pans upward. And it might even have been the night that this all went to hell, but it pans upward and you just see what's left of Scotland just in flames all over, even into the distance. And you get left with that feeling of you have no idea what's still going on in there. And if you had that very Escape from New York, dude, I can't imagine what is happening inside that wall. except that Escape from New York kind of did a little bit better of a job of like keeping it like a little more realistic. This one, it definitely was kind of out there, but it was so much fun.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is the director, he makes no secret of the fact that he was influenced by both Mad Max and Escape from New York, and it was a big part. Actually, there's a little tidbit of trivia here about a couple of the people that were cast or that were named in the cast, and there was the military group there. There were the different sergeants and everything, and there was one named Carpenter, and there was one named Miller. And the thing was that these were actually named. They were kind of nods to George Miller, you know, of course, of Mad Max fame, and then John Carpenter. And I think that's pretty cool that he kind of threw that in there for anyone to catch. I mean, those are pretty common names, so it's not that noticeable, I guess. But it's pretty cool that he did made that little nod there. And he makes no secret about the fact also that this is heavily based, or at least the main character, Eden Sinclair, is heavily based on both, you know, Max Rockatansky and Snake Plissken, you know. Yeah, and even to the point where she has one eye, one of them is a cybernetic eye, but she at one point, you know, has a eye patch just like Snake. So
yes,
it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that there are a lot of parts where you can pick out definitely and say that is from that movie. That, like, you know, the one part when Saul, the kind of the main raider guy, he kind of goes out on stage. And everybody is out in the audience, and they're, you know, they're cheering him on. They're so excited to see
him. It's almost like a rock concert.
Yeah, yeah. And he goes out there and he pumps up the audience and everything. That is very Thunderdome right there. You know, that's,
yes,
it's very, you know, they have the lights hanging up everywhere and everybody's just so much into it. And what it is, you know, he's not going to play music or he's not going to, you know, perform Macbeth. He's out there. to burn one of the soldiers that they captured, you know, and they actually burn him alive. And then they cut, like, this is where it gets pretty gruesome, but they cut him up and they, you know, kind of, well, you don't catch on to it until a couple minutes into it, but they're throwing plates out to everyone. And you're like, why are they throwing plates? And then you see when they burn the guy and then they start cutting him up, you're like, oh, that's why they had the plates.
Yes. Very barbaric.
Yes. Very, very barbaric.
Yeah, and that was interesting. There was actually elements of that it's funny because I don't consider myself like completely desensitized, but you know, we've seen a lot of movies. We tend, a lot of the, you know, genres of movies nowadays, you see a lot of really messed up stuff nowadays.
Yeah.
That scene actually surprisingly unnerved me a little bit because I don't like to see scenes where people are burning alive. Like, for example, like, I remember watching Silent Hill, you know, and watching the cop chick in that one get burned. I was like, oh, that's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
And so this took it to a new level. And I remember, but I think that's the point. I think they want you to really be shoved face first into their world and feel that definite, like, I hate them for being cannibals, you know, and it's, they want you to feel like, you know, what would it be like if you were there? How far have these people fallen?
Yeah.
You know, compared to the other side, there, you know, the medieval side, who's went a completely different direction, you know, and it was definitely a great way to not only get the audience reaction, but to make you, I mean, they wanted you to be wigged out by that. You were supposed to feel disgust.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think that's what, you know, if I were to kind of name my favorites and least favorites, I would, first of all, for least favorite things about this movie, is I think it was a hokey, storyline. It wasn't a bad overall plot. I think the plot was really great, but I think a lot of the execution in the acting here and there was a little kind of over the top. And I'm not talking about the raiders or anything like that, or the knights, you know, the medieval part. I'm talking about, like, the, you know, the prime minister, that part. I think that was that whole, I guess, like, the modern part of it, you know, where,
yeah,
like the whole part in London. I think that was a little I don't know. It wasn't the greatest. Like I said, that first half hour was really kind of boring. And then there's another couple chunks in there that get boring again. But I still think it's a great movie. If anyone out there hasn't seen it, you know, I highly recommend it. If you're any kind of a fan of that whole, like, rebuilt society type of thing, which I am, you know, the whole, you know, scavenging for armor and you know, things like that. I love that stuff. And that's what a lot of this is. But then it has that whole, you know, the invincible Marines that go in and infiltrate and, you know, do that kind of thing. That thing, I mean, they're not invincible because a lot of them actually did die, but, I don't know. Like, the girl, the main character, you know, she was kind of just able to do some feats that were just, you know, amazing, and you know, she never really got hurt or anything, you know what I mean, and she just kind of pressed on, and she's like a superhero or something like that. Which,
she was a female Snake Plissken, she really was.
Yeah, yeah, and that's you know what he said. He basically based it on that. But so if I were to talk about my favorite parts, I really enjoyed the fact that there were the three kind of main environments. You know, there was the modern day thing in London, where it was high tech military stuff. That was cool. You know, the military vehicles that they drove into Scotland, those were really cool. The guns they had, the suits they had were really cool. And then you have the raiders, you know, scavenging. They have this scrap metal armor all over. They have mohawks. They have really cool costumes. I mean, I watched that movie from kind of the angle where I'm getting more ideas for my own costume that you know, once I get it kind of finalized for Dragon Con, and I'm like, right. Ooh, that would be cool to put on my costume. So I think that was amazing. And then of course the third part being the medieval part, which was it looked like it was out of Lord of the Rings almost. You know, if you kind of squinted a little bit, and, you know, because they did have some modern parts put in there, but just the fact that what they were doing in this castle, how everyone was dressed, it was very much like they were trying to recreate a medieval society. Which, of course, the king guy, his name in the movie, his name is Kane, but it's played by Malcolm McDowell, and he, you know, it's kind of the society that he's trying to rebuild. He wants to start over. Of course, he was a doctor before, but he wants to start over, and he wants people to kind of live differently. So he's going to rebuild society by going back, you know, several hundred years. And I think it's a really cool idea. I guess a fourth would be, like you said, that the car chase scene at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have these – it's very Road Warrior. You know, they have the just some amazing vehicles that are chasing a Bentley.
Which is it's true.
It's just hilarious when you think about it. You know, it's like it's straight out of a Road Warrior, where they have these, you know, the crazy guys sitting on, you know, riding on top of vehicles going 100 miles an hour, and you know, the guy jumps from vehicle to vehicle, and it's a lot like that, but they're chasing a Bentley, and it's so just like, whoa, that's, I never thought I would have seen that in all of my life.
Well, and it's funny, like, and this is kind of going off what you were saying about the different distinct areas. One thing I noticed that kind of goes along with that was, and I love when movies do this. I love when movies use a theme or a color to tell the story. Like, if you've ever seen the movie Hero, that Asian film, Hero, you know, they tell the story with a lot of color at different scenes depending where you are. Mm-hmm. And this one did that too. When you're in the modern day, it's very smog, you know, kind of dullish colors. When you get to the area with the Chota area, as I called it, the Chota area, everything is dark, floodlights, most of the, like, abandoned, decrepit cities there. It's almost like the colors and the look of it, like, echo what they are. Then you get to the best part is you get, like, when they go through that that little vault area through the mountains, and they pop out, and suddenly it goes to being lush green, beautiful Camelot, and you have very bright colors, and even right down to the end, like when you're having the chasing, you're back to the, you know, the colors in between. And I was like, they definitely used a lot of lighting and color to really strike that mood. When you're in the Chota area, it looks like hell. Mm-hmm. When you're in the Camelot area, if things weren't already going to hell there, you'd probably be like, you know, I could live there.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like Paradise Lost in a way. And it was, but yet you keep going back to where, you know, London is supposed to be everything's normal. And yet, you know, London in that part of the future is just like smog ridden concrete hell. And it was like, interesting, you know? Like, which is the lesser of the three evils?
Yeah, and you know, I found myself thinking about that too while I was watching it, and I'm like, I would totally live in the medieval one, I think. I could totally do that. And but I thought it was funny too, the fact that these people, they did mention that Cain, the king guy, he did know that there were people outside of the wall, but he was teaching people that there was nothing out there. You know, he basically his daughter and his son and everybody, which I won't kind of get into that to spoil anything, but he was teaching people that there was nothing out there, and that this was it, which right there reminded me of the movie The Village. You ever see that?
Yes.
Yeah, it reminded me of that, because it was like they have their own,
their
own little thing in there, and they don't want anyone to know that there's a modern life outside of it. So I thought that was very, very interesting. And then you have what I thought was funny was the one girl who was kind of raised all of her life in the medieval part. When she saw the Bentley, she's like, "What does it do?" Like she had no idea what it was or what it did. I thought that was pretty funny. And it was almost like a time machine kind of thing, you know. But it was just ironic that it was the you know, still the present day.
Yeah, it's like driving. It's like driving like a Corvette through Iowa, and the guy's like, "Where does the corn go?" Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, I've been watching Mystery Science Theater too much lately. Yeah, no, that's interesting because you know it's that was an element that I really liked about it because you had kind of this like time machine-esque world where you know you had one that kind of like fell apart this direction and one that fell apart this direction and they went completely two different directions on that. And that was, I think, the reason why I enjoyed the film despite it being kind of hokey was because it was such a wonderful transition between section to section and everything, a culmination of everything that was just so fun about post-apocalyptic style movies kind of thrown together right down to even, like, this is going to sound really goofy to some because there are those I know out there who are John Carpenter fanatics. If you guys have ever seen Escape from L.A., you know, the second one, mm-hmm. It was so bad. There are parts of it that are good, but there were parts of it that were really bad. And you can tell right down to the moment where he had the, you know, like in the first Escape from New York, they had the, you know, the arena scene and it was pretty good. But this was an arena scene. Mm, I mean, yeah. And it was just like, how can we make it more messed up? And I think if I were to pick my favorite things about the movies, there were probably one in particular was that fight she has. When she gets to the castle, she basically has the fight with, I almost want to say, if I remember right, it was the guy who's the executioner, was it?
Right, right.
That massive, I mean, this guy looked like Saravok from Baldur's Gate. I mean, this guy was gargantuan, like armored, just looked like something like out of a nightmare. And she's not even got a weapon. And she's like, starts kicking the crap out of this thing. And it was, I love that. I love the fact that it was like, oh my gosh, can it get any more worse? You know, and. You know, the fact that when she first escapes from the Chota side, just the way it plays out and the fact that the Chota are chasing him down and, you know, they escape. Every time I saw him, I was like, dude, it's the Chota. And then they get out to, like, the medieval side, and I'm like, rain of fire.
Yeah.
Then they escape on a steam train, which just happens to coincidentally be there, I might add. I like the idea that they were saying, oh, we're back to steam trains. But at the same time, you're like, where did they get a steam train?
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know. Maybe in Scotland that's routine, but I guess they would have to have somebody who could make it work.
Yeah.
The one thing I did enjoy about this movie is I get a kick out of seeing a lot of people in a movie who I've seen in other movies and mm-hmm. figuring out where I've seen them before.
Yeah.
And there was quite a few. In fact, one of them threw me for a loop for a minute. Like, where have I seen you, dude? I've seen you somewhere. And, like, for example, the main chick, she was easy to tag. Rana Mitra she was in the movie, in the newest Underworld film, The Rise of the Lycans.
Oh, okay.
And then it's funny because then I have some people at work who are like, wasn't she that chick that in the Hollow Man, Kevin Bacon was invisible and he went to her house? Yeah. Okay, stop. You know, so she I recognize. The guy who was who worked for the prime minister, the one who later in the film is kind of like has his own agenda, so to speak. His mm-hmm. name's David O'Hara. He was the one who threw me because I'm like, dude, where have I seen you? And it dawns on me, it was that movie Wanted. He was the guy who was supposedly the kid's father who got killed in the beginning.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh yeah, the one who like ran across the skyscraper and shot through the window. And I'm like, that's him. The one that brought the laughter, I don't want to say like the happy boyish yay part though, was the guy who does play the prime minister. Alexander Siddig, he's been in a lot of films. I mean, everybody probably remembers he was the Dr. Bashir in Deep Space Nine. The one I remember him from the most was he played one of the main characters in Kingdom of Heaven, which is love that movie.
Oh yeah, that is
he's
a great movie.
Like he takes his horse. He's like, this is his land. You know, he's an incredible actor. And then from there, you just had little bits and pieces from people. Like you had the guy from Event Horizon, who was the pilot, and you know, little cameos by this guy or this guy. But I got to give credit. You know, Malcolm McDowell was obviously fun because you had the Fallout 3 factor as well. And Malcolm McDowell's in all the great post-apocalyptic films. But the guy, I don't know where they found that guy. Who played the leader of the Chota side, but dude, that guy was—he should be a rock star because he was so outrageously cool looking.
Yeah,
Saul. I had to give credit. Saul, yes, the guy who played Saul was amazing, and I've seen guys try to attempt that look and fail miserably.
Yeah,
but that guy in real life, you see his picture, and you're like, dude, you're scary looking. I mean, he seriously looks like the offspring of two very bad meth addicts. And I don't know where they found that guy. I know that he showed up in the director. He did that movie, The Descent. And okay. I guess if you've seen the movie The Descent, they're almost like Morlocks underground kind of thing. I guess he was one of the leaders, and I can see why, because he's a creepy looking dude.
You know who he reminded me of when I first saw him is you ever see the guys in System of a Down?
Yes.
He looks like the guitar player. Just the crazy looking.
Right. He does look like him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, he reminds me of, and I almost had to look it up. I almost want to look it up and see. You remember that movie? This is funny because we're like jumping to movies here, but you remember the movie The Fifth Element?
Yeah.
Okay, remember The Fifth Element where everybody shows up at the airport at the same time pretending to be Bruce Willis's character, and there's those two couples those punk couples that show up, and their skin is like moving outward because they're actually the aliens, and the one is like kind of burping because he can't hold the skin on.
Yeah.
He's got these googly eyes. I thought that was him for a second. I'm like, dude, where'd they find that guy? But I loved the characters, and like you said, there are parts that are a little bit over the top, but you know what? I'm glad it was, because I can't imagine this movie really trying to take itself really seriously.
Yeah.
You could tell they were running with already the hokiness of it, but it worked because it was hokey.
Mm-hmm. You know what's funny is we're talking about it right now, and I'm like, man, like, why did I ever think that the movie was not that great? Like, man, that movie was great. Like, in retrospect, maybe it's like one of the greatest movies in retrospect ever, because I keep thinking about, the best parts, and I keep thinking, that was a great part. But when I was watching it, and maybe this will happen again, maybe I need to watch it again, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, there's that slow part there, yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems like when you're watching it, the bad parts are easily forgettable, and then later, the parts that really stick in your memory are just really amazing parts, and I think that's a kind of a testament to the movie.
Well, and that's the thing is with that movie, the characters really don't drive the story. It's really the environments and the ambience that drive the story. Like, I compare it to the movie Waterworld. And I'm sure there's people out there that absolutely adore Waterworld. I liked Waterworld. I love it for what it is. But when I go and watch Waterworld, I'm not watching for Kevin Costner. I'm watching the boat. And it's one of those kind of movies that, as a whole, the movie is a great movie because it has some amazing scenes in it that just really portray this world underwater, but yet Kevin Costner is Kevin Costner. That's how it is with this movie. I mean, these guys aren't, it's not that bad with this movie, but you almost are having fun because the environments and the world that takes place in are everything that's wee about post-apocalyptic stories.
Mm-hmm.
They really try to shove all of it in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Yeah, I think I was trying to think earlier, like, if I were to give this movie a rating, that would be difficult. Like, out of 10, I would probably say, I mean, even in retrospect, I would say maybe 7.5.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I think it really does come down to the context in which you're expecting it to be. If you're looking at this movie expecting it to be Children of Men, which freaking phenomenal post-apocalyptic movie.
Yeah.
You are going to walk out of this going, what in the hell?
Yeah.
Because it really is very silly-ish, comic book-ish. If you walk into this movie expecting to see just a post-apocalyptic good time and know that there are going to be parts in it that are just going to be over the top because they are, you will probably have a riot with it for that reason alone. And that's why I agree with you. I think 7.5 is good. 8 if you go into it expecting that this is going to be silly anyway. But I think, like I said, I think the movie doesn't try to take itself too seriously, because that's always where the movies fall on their face.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. And I think that would be a wise way to approach it. It's a great action film. It has some, wonderful cinematography, as far as even the car chases and the explosions and all that kind of stuff. It's really great for that. The storyline is not horrible. I mean, I don't think that it's very practical to put a wall around Scotland, but it had to be done for the story,
right.
And the way. So I think some of the storyline was a little off, and I think it was a little like we said, hokey, but that's not why people go to see this movie. I think it was just, man, it was a great action movie.
Yeah, one thing that's funny, and it was as I was looking at the wiki, did you pick up on the fact that they wanted, like we were talking about the cars and the fact that they're chasing a Bentley, that the reason he chose the Bentley was because he was inspired by Casino Royale and wanted a sexy looking car, and I guess they had purchased three new Bentleys for $150,000 each.
Holy.
And I'm like, that is a lot of money to make a post-apocalyptic movie. You know, it's almost like maybe you could have, you know, had a more Chota. I don't know. Like,
like a Dodge, like, Stratus or something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. It's like in some places, yeah, seriously, a Sebring, I would outrun the Sebring. No, one thing that's funny about that, I mean, in some places it makes sense that you would go that far with it, and you could tell this guy probably was just having fun. Like, oh, they're throwing money at us, we better use
yeah,
it.
But, yeah.
Like, in, you know, in a movie like Mad Max, you could see, like, when they say, we're spending an extra year just for the car, we nod our head and go, you better. Because that's what the star of the film is, really. But this game, I said this game, that's funny, you can tell where my mind is. No, I'm not thinking about Fallen Earth as we speak. the Chota factor again. You could tell that this guy was just having a riot with it. I mean, he was probably just like, you know what? Let's make it a Bentley. You know, and he probably pocketed it after they left. Like, hey, well, these are just going back to storage, so I'll just take this one.
Well, you know what's funny, too, is this movie did get a huge budget beforehand. And one of the parts of that budget was actually the Scottish... they have like a national body for film and television. Like, you know, it's almost like a federal film and television division. It's called Scottish Screen. They contributed £300,000 to the production of the movie because, and I think this is funny, because they were kind of looking at it as an investment in tourism. You know, they're like, we're going to make this movie in Scotland, and it's going to be a huge budget film, and it's going to get, you know, Americans to come over here and spend their money, and it's, you know what I mean? It's going to be great. And I don't think that they realized that it was going to have, like, burning people and eating people, you know, and stuff like that. And what's funny is they say in the wiki again that there was, of course, the critical acclaim was not there. You know, the critics kind of didn't really give it the greatest of ratings here and there, and it kind of flopped, I guess, in the theaters. But Scotland, you know, the BAFTA Scotland awards didn't even, I mean, they didn't even nominate it, I guess. And so the Scottish Screen, you know, this national film and television body, they were a little disappointed because they were really looking for it as an investment. And I think that I just think it's funny that they were like, yeah, whatever you guys are going to do with this movie. Yeah, here's £300,000. Make your movie. And then we don't want to know what it's about. And then once it's done, they're like, oh, that's what it was going to be about. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You remember the preview? Like, the preview had it all kind of goofed up a little bit. And I hate when a movie fails because the preview really isn't a very good preview. You know, and one thing when I first saw the preview of it, they had it set up good, you know, like, it's the world, you know, after this. And at first I was thinking, like, when I saw the walls, I'm thinking, oh, dude, it's like an Escape from New York, because we love Escape from New York. And then all of a sudden they focused too much on the Chota being wild. And all of a sudden it looked like it wasn't any longer a post-apocalyptic good movie. It was more about, like, crazy tribesmen behind the wall. And it was like, well, I don't want to watch that.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the end, you understand. When you watch it, you see it's not literally – it's some of that, but it's not to the extent that they kind of made it feel in the preview. You know, and I compare this of how you do a film, which is, you know, you look at the preview for District 9 and you're like, dang. But you can tell it's Friday for us. It's, like, been a long week. and that's the thing is that's like kind of like side subject here. The other thing, because as we were talking here, I pulled the Wikipedia back up. Did you catch, and I know this isn't necessarily on purpose that they did this, but I just thought it was got a chuckle out of it. Did you see how long that the movie was in theaters?
Oh, no, I missed that.
28 days.
Oh, geez.
28 days later, it just shows their movie set. It's just like, I was like, oh, no, no. I thought that was kind of a funny, nobody would ever read that, but it's like, hey, that's pretty hilarious.
That's funny. Well, cool. I guess we've said all we can say about that movie.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, if you want a good action movie, post-apocalyptic, but it's mixed in with modern and, you know, medieval, definitely check this movie out. I think it's definitely worth it.
It's worth a Netflix rent. Definitely worth it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But let's, before we finish out this show, I wanted to read one or two emails here so we can start catching up a little bit. This one here is from It's from Rook, and he actually puts at the bottom, it's spelled R-U-H-K, and he says, pronounced like the chess piece, by the way.
Cool.
So anyway, he says, in episode 21, Sean voiced his concern about the influenza vaccine creating a flu superbug. And he says, let me put your fears to rest. Bacteria and viruses are both constantly mutating and evolving, but whereas with bacteria, this produces an ever-increasing arms race of bacteria versus antibiotics.
Right.
We do not face quite the same problem with the influenza vaccine. Antibiotics and vaccines work in entirely different ways. Antibiotics are basically just chemical compounds designed to interfere with the growth
and
production of bacteria. Vaccines, on the other hand, work by subjecting a person to a small dose of a dead or inactive virus, giving the subject's immune system an opportunity to tailor a natural immune system response to the virus without the person actually becoming infected. So, wow, this Rook, man, this is pretty deep. This is pretty heavy stuff here.
Yeah, I can't believe, you know, as he's saying that, it's one of the head slapping moments where I'm like, I cannot believe I wasn't thinking that, because, you know, I knew that, and it was it, which proves once again that subconsciously we want the world to end. We're hoping it will. Like after, you know, the influenza, everybody's out. Oh, no. Oh, never mind. We'll try again next time. But I mean, it's funny he mentions that. It was like, it kind of went up there with the whole infected versus undead, and I'm like, well, oh, duh. Why wasn't I thinking that? And he's right. It's the way it works is completely opposite.
Yeah. And he goes on. He explains it in pretty much detail. But he also says, unlike the ever-escalating battle with bacteria, each flu season, the war starts anew with fresh troops, so to speak. Because
right.
it's like he says, each seasonal flu vaccine is a unique blend of the three most common flu strains. But you know, flus aren't always the same, so this is kind of a constant battle and kind of ever-evolving. But he wraps it up here. He says, because the seasonal flu vaccine only combats the three most common influenza strains each season, occasionally a strain will come out of nowhere and hit hard, like this year's H1N1 swine flu, in which case a secondary vaccine will have to be produced. But these pandemic strains are produced by blind chance and unpredictable infection patterns,
right.
not the flu vaccine itself. And he says, hope I was offered some insight. Keep fighting the good fight. That's some really good information there. You know, I mean, I sit here and I have no clue about any of this stuff. I mean, I just learned all this stuff. But, you know, and then I say that I'm kind of antibacterial stuff, you know, and all that. I'm still against that kind of stuff. I still don't really believe in you know, taking a bath in it every time you go outside. But I see what he's saying. He's basically explaining it out, and I think that was great. So thanks for that email, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, and he makes a good point too. And I think really what it comes down to is sometimes we have to stop and remember the science of it, and not listen so much to the media panic of it, because.
Yeah.
You know, that's really the most dangerous part is how quickly we freak out before we really stop and go, exactly what are we freaking out about again? Yeah, it's true. You know, I think, like, you know, as soon as this, I even people at my work, as soon as H1N1 and everybody's like running to the people are like barreling each other over to get this viral thing. And it's like, what are you doing? You know, like, stop and look at yourself. Are you insane? And then I think about the world ending and everything's happy. So.
You're like, yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, the Chota, I'm on their side.
All right, we got one more here I wanted to read. It's kind of a long one, but it says, Sean and Jonathan, hello to you both. Thank you both for the time, energy, and effort that you put into the show. And that also goes for the multiple shows that you both do. Well, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
I finished listening to your most recent shows where you talked about the Postman, and I have to say that I enjoyed it a lot. I am one of those people who have only seen the movie, and I look forward to getting the book. I feel about the same as you both do in regards to the movie and the praise/criticism you both voiced. The Postman will always rank up there with me, though, in regards to movies, as part of it were filmed in the area that I graduated from, in Medeline Falls, Washington.
Oh, interesting.
I did not live in the area when they were filming, but I did make a few trips back just to check things out. My fiance lived there at the time they were filming, though, and she has a lot of memories of the filming. That's pretty cool.
How about that?
The parts that were filmed in my old hometown area that I can recall, cry pardon, I haven't seen the movie in a while, were the first town that Kevin arrives at, where he mentions President Starkey. The town battle right after that, and the dam with Tom Petty is called Boundary Dam, which was cool to see in the movie. And
yeah.
I believe that there's one other location, maybe the cabin, but I'm not sure. I get a kick out of that movie every time I watch it, as I know some of the extras that are here and there. So he knows some of the extras. That's pretty cool. Oh, and then he's got a Fallen Earth note here. He says, I've been playing since beta, and I love the game. The stream of patches and the passion that the developers have for the game is a refreshing change from all the previous MMOs I've played. I play, and then he gives me his names, so I won't read those. This one's just for you, Jonathan. He says, Jonathan, have you ever thought of releasing your skits that you do in the beginning of your shows as a compilation? I would see it as content, as extra content for those that follow TTA or Gamers Anthology. I feel that they are pretty good, and I wouldn't mind having them all in one location. Have you ever thought of doing an episodic podcast based around a skit idea, like an old FM-style radio show? I can imagine the time, resources involved in an endeavor like that would be crazy. it says, well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, can I answer this? Would this be appropriate? Because it's funny he mentions that because, and I'll kind of throw this out too. One of the, you know, I've had people ask about the Online Gamers Anthology, and you know, and I'm not sure, you know, everybody who's around me knows that I had this incident in my family where, you know, we lost our daughter and it kind of threw me out of whack and everything kind of been picking up. And one of the things I've always wanted to finish Anthology, and I still hold that I'm going to end up getting there. But the other day, it did dawn on me. You know what I had to do is seriously, like, we have so many skits now. And I said this because me and Sean before the show were talking about, you know, how many episodes we've done because we're here we're at 25. And we were talking about how, you know, how many skits at the beginning, how even I've gone back and listened to some of the skits, like, that's not me, is it? Oh, my gosh. And how did I forget that one, you know? And it had dawned on me that I probably should even, like, put together, like, a Blogspot link, you know, have, like, each of the skits from the different shows. And I've even toyed with the idea of just doing, you know, even a show with some, like, funny themed gaming intros or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ponder that a bit. I think the Blogspot thing is inevitable. I think that's not hard to do. Just make links to the, you know, just the skits. But, it's interesting because actually hearing somebody mention it makes me think about it even more. I mean, it would be cool because it really is kind of like, what would you call it, like behind the scenes material for our show.
Yeah.
Like extras and stuff. And funny enough, I even thought about, like, that'd be kind of funny. Like every once in a while, maybe release the behind the scenes of me and Sean as we wind up for the show. But then you would probably just start laughing because it, like, most of what we end up talking about is like, oh wait, we're supposed to talk about this on the show.
Yeah. So save it for the show.
Save it for the show. Sorry about that. You know? So, I'll think about that. I think that's a really, really cool idea. You know, I'll keep you guys updated. And, you know, and I say that through this show because, you know, I know that a lot of the people, you know, dig on those skits and, mm-hmm. and intros. And I know I tend to drive Sean crazy with the amount of crap I put him through. Like, wait, I have to put this, I have to finish this, you know, and it especially lately. But yeah, that would be a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys, you know, appreciate the intros for what they are.
Yeah. I mean, everything I've ever heard from anyone has always been positive about the intros. So even when you're worried about it, like when you do the 10-minute one and then you're like, you know, I wonder how people are going to think about this. But the feedback's always positive, so.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I like that point. I'll see what I can do in the meantime.
Cool. Okay, I have one more I want to read. I know I said two, but I want to read one more because this one, it kind of plays off of the last one. That's why I want to read it. And it's funny because it's kind of a polar opposite of the last one. It says, Gentlemen, Paladins, and Hopes of Humanity. I have followed your every move as you both made your way across the wastes for 21 terrific episodes. I, the loyal dog meat to your lone wanderer. So, when you unleashed episode 22, you had to know I was going to watch The Postman on your good authority. Unbeknownst to me that you would gleefully endorse a farter like The Postman starring Kevin Costner. One of two highlights of that movie being when Tom Petty shows up halfway through with this look on his face like, WTF am I doing here? Which is the same expression I had on my face when that mule of a movie finally wrapped up with its horrid conclusion. What was particularly baffling to me was the way you derided the nude scene with that righteous babe, the second of the two highlights. Well, we'll call them highlights. When that scene, when that scene turned out to be the only rewatchable scene in that Insomniac's remedy of a so-called film. Wow. And he wraps it up. He says, I love your podcast, I really do, but please don't turn me on to any more poop just because it kind of fits your theme. Oh, and more awesome epic intros, please.
Well, now, you know what? In our defense, and I'm only doing a slight defense because I know that a lot of times, and this may actually find itself into the next skit sooner than later, the idea that I'm always happy about movies, is the fact that I think in that one we did kind of give this disclaimer because yeah. I'm pretty open about the fact that I did not like the movie much at all. Yeah. And I tend to sound happy even when I'm angry, so maybe that was part of the problem because I'm like, yeah, I hated it. It was, despicable, but I'm still like smiling the whole time. But I think one of the things, like, I think for me looking back at that movie and especially the episode we did, if I remember correctly, I think I was more talking about the book being phenomenal, mm-hmm. but that the movie itself, I don't think we felt good just straight up saying it's a piece of crap because there are moments in it that bear mentioning because they are post-apocalyptic style. And I'm not just talking about the boobs in that. Although that's funny that it got mentioned, though. But it was a thing where I don't remember, like, I don't think I ever really cared for the movie all around. And I think that was one of the things I was saying in the episode was, like, you know what? The book was so much better. And I might even say, I think what we were saying, like, check out the movie for the context in which it is, but read the book. And I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong. I think that, and it just kind of in our defense, like, I don't want to say, like, I totally understood the point, but it was almost like, how dare you accuse me of saying The Postman was good. You know what I mean? It's well, like, just I've never liked that movie, but I mean, I was willing to like look past some of the crap and find moments that were worth mentioning for even like a second.
Well, yeah, I think that's one thing about the two of us. You know, a lot of times shows work well when it's kind of good cop, bad cop, and we don't do that often because I think we're very similar in our tastes.
It's true.
And we both have this outlook where we're willing to consider the fact that other people might enjoy something, so we don't want to be like, this is the stupidest movie ever. But at the same time, we're telling our opinion. Well, I think for the Postman, I mean, when I read this email, I thought the same thing. I was like, wait a minute, I don't remember really endorsing that movie that much. But I think we did a little bit. I think I remember one thing I said was, you know, if you don't read the book and you want a good movie just by itself, it's a pretty good movie. But if you read the book, don't watch this movie. I think that's kind of what I was saying, not in so many words, was that, and I think I even said it, that if it was called something other than The Postman, it would have been a good movie, you know, because it
yes.
really had nothing at all to do with the book.
Yes.
And I think that was the kind of our point. And maybe, you know, maybe we skirted around the issue that it was a hokey movie. But still, I still stand by the fact, by what I said, because I watched the movie first. I think maybe that has a lot of influence on it. But, you know, I watched the movie first and I enjoyed it. And then when I read the book, I said, wow, I can see why people who read the book first did not like the movie because it's just
it was rage.
Yeah. It just makes it look horrible. So what's his name? Aaron. Yeah. If you don't, if you haven't read the book and you saw the movie, you should probably just stop there.
let's, and if you haven't read the book, you know, let that be our repentance, if you will. You know, I'm sorry I sounded that happy because truthfully, I really didn't like the movie. Although I'm gonna have to tell people work, like, I get a chuckle out of, like, the one scene worth watching over and over is the chick from The Sixth Sense, you know, getting naked and, you know, stuff. So, I remember watching that movie and just going, what in the heaven's name was that?
Yeah.
But one thing though, in its defense, the guy who played Bethlehem, I can't remember I remember his last name is Patton. I can't remember his first name, but I like that guy as an actor. He played a creepy bad guy in that movie.
And again,
I'm not endorsing the movie, but I look back at that movie and I guess I can find nuggets in it that are worth being like, hey, that was a pretty cool scene. But yeah. Maybe we should just the boobs. I don't know.
But I think, like I said, you know, I like the movie on its own. I don't like it as The Postman. I think that's
right. I agree.
Yeah.
That's probably the most times that people have ever heard me say, like, words like booze, like, in the whole time I've done the show. I hope nobody's getting offended. Like, seriously, we mean that in completely, like, fun context. We're not trying to sound, like, insane, like we've lost our marbles.
We're just 12, that's all.
We don't sound like we're all of a sudden, like what happened to Sean and John there? But, it's that was a funny letter. I'll have to, that's interesting. I'll have to mention that to the guys at work.
Well, cool. I think that's a good way to end this show, I think.
Oh, wait, we can't end the show on this note. There has to be something we can offset it with. Oh, and you know what? I know what we can offset it with.
What?
Those of you who have not noticed, Terminator Salvation came out, and came out on Blu-ray also, in fact, with the director's cut, which I watched, and frankly, I didn't notice much more beyond it, except the scene with... well, we're back to boobs. I didn't notice. It was actually quite interesting. There was going back and watching again. Did you see? You saw Terminator Salvation?
Yeah,
you?
I saw it in the theater. Yeah.
Right. Did you like it overall?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Yeah.
See, I've talked to a lot of people lately who absolutely did not like that movie, and I'm, you know, I know I sound happy at times, but that's one movie where I was kind of looking back going, really? Like, because there was so much fun lore in it. But anyways, the reason I bring it up is because, so if you really dug on that movie, I'm assuming you probably would own it by now, but just kind of a reminder that did come out on video, and I went back and watched it, and I actually enjoyed it more the second time. And so, we'll see. Hopefully the economy hasn't tanked everything too bad. I know they were having – the Terminator license was actually kind of changing hands slightly there, but that they had greenlighted another Terminator movie to be the next one. So, nice apocalyptic nugget there to end not on the Postman.
That's cool. All right. Well, if you want to email us and let us know what you hated about the show or whatever you want to talk about, just email us at show@throughtheaftermath.com. And we also have our Twitter page where I try to get some of the latest news up there whenever I can. And we have our Facebook group. And you can check us out on our main website, which is throughtheaftermath.com, which actually it forwards to our Blogspot website, which is basically a collection of the show notes. So you can read up on links and anything we talk about in the show, and I put them in the show notes. Plus, there's an archive of all of our previous episodes. So I guess that's about it. And we don't know exactly what we're going to do yet for next time, but I'm sure we'll decide before then. But and also, actually, we're coming up pretty soon. I think next month we're going to be on the LifeNet podcast. Those guys were on the show last time for us, so it'll be our turn to be on their show. So you can look for that.
For the 1 year anniversary too. Right?
Yeah,
of the show.
That's true. Yeah, we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary at the end of January. It's about a little bit more than a month away. So I'm really excited about that. We'll have to do something special.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So that's it from us. So until next time, this is Sean.
And this is Jonathan saying, stay alive out there and don't watch the Postman.